Pour something flammable into your glass. It's Jaded Gamercast. My name is Lang. With me, as always, is Nathan. Nathan, I'm back to scotch. I have such a stocked liquor cabinet right now. It's kind of hard to choose what to drink. And I was like, well, when in doubt, scotch.
Yeah, I mean, you still have some vodka left over from the shot.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, as you were saying, vodka is kind of shit. So why not go for the classics?
Yeah, well, and I've got vodka I don't like to drink because vodka tastes like vomit. So yeah, there's that.
Especially when it's mixed with vomit.
Yes, exactly. When it is mixed with vomit. All right. So what are you drinking today?
I was feeling kind of tired, so I grabbed a coffee on the way home, and I got a bottle of Bailey's now.
Oh, isn't that just so sweet?
Yeah, I know. You know, you had to drink some on the way home, so that way there's enough room to put the Baileys in, and you're good to go.
I like soaking my tampon in Baileys, personally. okay, so we are going to be talking about Star Trek Attack Wing. It's going to be our full-on in-depth review of this new game that has recently come out. But before we get on to that, let's go into the weekly listener poll for this week, or from last week. Haha. Which is, when building a Space Marine chapter, do you prefer to build a canon chapter or to instead play a unique successor chapter? So do you like to make up your own chapter or do you like to play something from the canon? Interesting results here, but slightly more people. 60% of the votes went to canon chapters and the other 40% went to unique successors, which was very, very interesting. We did have a couple of comments in here. Chris Carlson said, White Scars, blah, 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 blah. I never liked Stormlords. You know, thanks for contributing. Thanks for contributing to the conversation, Chris. And then we had a couple people vote on the poll or comment on the poll as opposed to commenting on the website. So it's pure luck that I found them. Irv said, let me start by writing that I primarily play orcs in 40K and orcs in fantasy.
You know, orc players are like that, yes, too, though.
They like to let you know that they play orcs. And then they also
game.
And then they also always tell you how many points they have. They're just like, first off, I play orcs, 10,000 points. And you're just like, okay, I get it. You got a lot of orcs. And the first thing he does, 10,000 and 5,000 points respectively.
Never let us down, orc players.
Absolutely.
Never let us down.
I play orcs in fantasy in 40K as well, and I also know how many points I have in both off the top of my head. So don't get me wrong.
Because I don't know how many points of Tyranids I have. That's why when Maddie challenged me to that APOC game, I was just like, I think I have this many. And then I ended up not having them, having to go for stratagems. Because I'm like, I got lots.
So Irv says, with that out of the way, I started a Space Marine Army 2 years ago, picked the Iron Lords chapter. The ultra sparse fluff about containing the vile Bargees is what attracted me. I finally have 3,000 points of Space Marine Army ready for local league gaming in SoCal and crap. Now I look like that guy picking the Iron Hand successor chapter with loads of dreadnoughts, tanks, and tech marines. GW sucks eggs. At least GW didn't screw the hell out of Ilkathay Craft World. Ilkathay Craft? Yeah, okay. Army for the new Eldar Codex. Prefer armies that are not commonly played. Crudace! That was in his comments as well.
Hey, yeah, it's,
you know, I think that that's always going to be a very interesting thing because, you know, it wasn't something that was part of the poll, but there are a lot of people who will play canon chapters, but they will go for the chapters that are not quite so common, not the Black Templars, Ultramarines, you know, stuff like that. They go for the lesser known chapters or the lesser known successor chapters, like, you know, throwing down like Brazen Claws or something, you know, where it's just like, oh, yeah. Fuck,
I play Howling
exist.
Griffins. Oh yeah, fuck. Who are their, you know, like their parent chapter? Like,
exactly.
Like that.
Exactly. So we had another one. LA said most people go with canon chapters because you will be able to find one that fits what you are looking for without much effort. But because let's face it, they've had 30 years to make them cool. Other than like Ward or some shit, most people's custom legions look like ass, and they are just stupid. End of story. So hey, there's a Ward fan out there.
Oh, see, I was just assuming he was referencing Matt Ward's Grey Knights and Blood Angels, because let's be honest, they're both fanfic armies.
And it's not like he capitalized the W in Ward, but then again, there's not really any proper grammar or sentence structure happening in this comment, so that doesn't really mean anything. I'm just going to throw that up for a Ward fan.
All right.
Last comment from Harrison, being able to create your own chapter gives you a level of modeling and painting freedom. canon chapters cannot really apply. Plus, painting one of the 3 to 4 different Black Marines chapters or attempting yellow sounds dull or horrible.
That's racist. I mean, straight up, just... What? Look, he just says he doesn't want to paint blacks. I don't know how else you can read that statement.
If Maddie were here, he'd be going black and yellow, but that's a rap thing. He says, I went with a Greek theme for my Space Marines. Then 6 months later, Forge World came out with Minotaurs. I guess I play Minotaurs now. which is pretty rad. You know, okay, so thanks very much for commenting, guys. Thanks very much for voting on the poll. I was actually surprised. I thought more people would go with unique successor chapters than went with canon. But kind of the more I thought about it and the more things have gone over the last couple of years, it maybe shouldn't surprise me quite so much.
Well, like I said, I really think that even 5 years ago, before the launch of the Horus Heresy Black Library stuff, and before Forge World decided to double down on making all the Marines,
mm-hmm.
I really do think that it would have been a swing for unique successors. Because again, I remember when, you know, even before I worked for the company, when I would just be going out to a gaming night, you know, there was that one guy. Everybody knew it was Mark who played Ultramarines, and everyone else did their own fucking thing. You know, it's just like rarely you'd see where it's just like, wow, and you do Crimson Fists too? That's so cool. Because again, back then there was no Pedro Cantor, there were no rules, and it was literally just like, no, I just think blue with the red fist looks badass.
I just like, love the idea of chapter fluff where they don't wash their hands. I just think it's amazing.
Right.
Right.
But like I said, last week, I think the Black Library has done an excellent job of making all of the canon chapters relatable with their personal hygiene and all of the other elements that really...
Pedro Cantor's battle cry is, fuck Purell. That's all I was giggling at that in my head. It wasn't even really funny when I said it. It
really wasn't.
But in my brain...
I was going to say it was kind of a letdown once you actually got it out.
But in my brain, it was hilarious.
Fair enough. But yeah, like I said, I think that the reason you have this leaning towards canon chapters is you have so much support and so much depth to them, which never existed before. Because, again,
LA said, they got 30 years to get it right.
Well, yeah, but even then, you know, back in third edition, you know, if I like right now, I guarantee that most people can name, you know, at least half of the Primarchs, if not all of them. Way back in the day, remember when we were working for the company, that was always our fucking like theme point where it's just like whenever someone would just be like, I'm really into the fluff and I love the universe, we'd just be like, name all the Primarchs and their legions. They'd be like, well, there's
McCraggan.
There's Russ. Russ with the wolves. Because
he was the Imperial Guard Primarch.
Yeah, you know, and like that's the thing where it's just like back then, even Games Workshop was not spending a lot of time and effort in fleshing out and humanizing almost all of the different Marine legions because they were just a trivia point.
Mm-hmm.
But thanks to the Black Library and then thanks to Forge World in making these gorgeous fucking models that bring that whole era to life, people are finally getting behind them. And I think that's the only reason why canon is more.
Yes. I have to agree. But thanks to everyone for voting, because you just segued perfectly into the model of the week.
I know. I kept trying to lay it up there for you.
That wasn't even a layup, dude. That was a soft hand pass. And then you gave me a stepladder and you're like, go put it through that net thing. And I was like, touchdown. Okay, so we are going to talk. Model of the week is from Forge World. It was kind of teased today, which is pretty rad, but it is the Ferris Manus model. And I never up until this point would have ever thought to myself, Space Marine should go sleeveless. But now I'm kind of like, all Space Marines should be sleeveless. Like, that's kind of the way. It's hard not to feel that way now. Like, now I'm sitting there looking at my Space Marines going like, this is bullshit. I need to find some Catachan arms and make this shit happen. This is ridiculous.
Here they are wearing sleeves like a sucker.
He's like 95% Kevin Sorbo right now. It's amazing. The model's really nice and, you know, really, really well done, which is kind of funny considering that, you know, we've seen some really good diorama models from Forge World and we've seen some not so good ones.
Well, yeah, I mean, we actually, I mean, this is part of their Horus Heresy character series,
yes.
And we took the piss out of Abaddon and Loken, because we talked about how terrible, you know, the facial expressions and the poses and how it looks kind of fake and artificial, and we even talked about Angron, and where it suffered much the same things. And even Fulgrim looked a little, yeah, I didn't really feel like it captured it.
Fulgrim is just a shame.
Yeah.
I look at it and I'm just like, ooh.
Well, the worst part is, like, before I saw this model, I would say that the Fulgrim model was okay. Like, it, you know, it's pretty nice. Now, you compare it to this, to Ferris Manus, the Gorgon, Primarch of the Iron Hands, which is his full name on their site. And you look at Fulgrim and you're just like, yeah, Fulgrim's just a piece of shit asshole. Like, you know, this model is perfect down to every single detail. And I think that that's, like, for me, I'm just like, I can't believe it. Because, again, we've seen them do Primarchs before. This is the third Primarch in their series. Easily the best one. And it really does kind of capture everything about it. You know, like, and you're right. Like, even with the sleeveless thing, where it's just like, I never really thought that sleeveless with, like, bracers was ever a good look. But, yeah, you look at this model and you're just like, yeah, I get it.
Nah, man, the bracers is what makes it Kevin Sorbo.
Yeah,
right. No, you know, it's a really smart design. They did a good job putting it together, even though he is doing the triple shoulder pads on each side action. But if you don't have sleeves, it kind of makes sense, right? It's not like the Scrotal Colossus where it's just unnecessary shoulder pads. These are necessary.
I am a robot. Let's put more and more and more shoulder pads.
The backpack, all of the little baubles hanging off of them, but primarily the design of the armor, I think, is really, really smart. I love the bits matching to the hammer, matching to the bracers. And you know, the Primarchs, I don't mind them not wearing helmets quite so much. So for the most part, I think it's a really, really nice looking model. It's like if fucking Commander Shepard were a Space Marine. It's kind of the look on his face.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and again, I think the reason why I love this model so much is it really has everything. I mean, it's dynamic, because, I mean, I ragged on that with
the Centurions. Also, literally has everything in that backpack.
Right? If you actually scroll to the back, you're just like, plasma gun, check, flamer, check, chainsword, damn. It is like a Swiss Army knife back there. No, but I mean, like, the pose is dynamic, and I hate it on the Centurions because they're these big, bulky, statuesque kind of fucking poses. But I mean, here he is, he's stepping, he's mid-swing with his big-ass heavy hammer. You know, you've got all the details in there, the head of the hammer's got the 10 for the Legion. Pose. Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely an action
you
pose.
You get the impression that he is mid-swing, not the impression that he is frozen in place.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you get that. All of the detailing on the armor looks fantastic. It's not, surprisingly, it's not even overdone. Like, when you look at this armor, you've got bare plates, you know, like you look at his thighs and they're just plate armors. You know, he's got some detailing. It's not over the top. He kind of has a chain fetish thing going on. Honestly, I think it works for the model, which is weird because I'm not a huge fan of, like, unnecessary flair.
Well,
if you wanted the minimum to be 17 pieces of flair, why don't you make the minimum 17 pieces of flair?
Well, I don't think it's that bad, just because I think it fits with the model, and it does a good job of contrasting with the flat open areas like the arms and the thighs, as you pointed out before. You know, we see the Iron Hands logo, which is great. It's, you know, on the knee pad, which is really cool. I love the exposed gears on the knee pad, like on the knee section, which is really slick looking. And I think they just did a good job of making, like, not necessarily an understated model, but just a well designed model. And I love the idea that, you know, it's one of the first models you've seen in a really, really long time that doesn't have, like, a fucking ridiculous Thunderhammer, right? Like, this whole idea of, like, if it's a character's Thunderhammer, it has to be a fist grabbing a lightning bolt punching a crow. That's what it is. And you're like, hey, why can't it just be a Thunderhammer? And this one, you kind of feel like, ah, it's a nice Thunderhammer. I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
Well, I'm pretty happy with it. Cat, you better shut up. Get the fuck out of this.
It's gonna, this is what you get for not packing your can of air to throw at the cats.
I got a whole body full of air. Have you noticed how she reacted to my... She
That's
freaks
true.
The fuck. She's like, no! The can! She
That's
loses
fair.
It.
But anyway, kind of moving off of the cat.
Why? Why would we move off of the cat?
this is the
model internet. Of the week. My cat Domino.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is the internet. I mean, if we make a cat model of the week, our listenership triples to six. No, but again, and I think just in the last bit that I want to mention about it, and where for me, where I was just like, it goes from like a great model to just like perfectly designed and executed, is the fact that Ferris Manus's scenic diorama base clips perfectly into Fulgrim's base, is sort of a reenactment of the Massacre of Istvan V when Fulgrim does kill Ferris Manus, you know, after their sort of epic duel kind of thing. And I thought that that was such a nice touch. And there I am just smacking my mic because whatever.
You're drunk.
Yeah, Jesus Christ.
All right, so we'll have a link for that on the website, on the post. You can click it and you can see what we're talking about. How exciting. All right, so let's talk about Star Trek. It's a little bit of a departure. It's been a long time since we did like a new game review, but it was shortly after we were told that WizKids was going to be doing a Star Trek game with the same rules as the X-Wing game, which neither of us were really all that interested in. I think it was a total of 4 seconds before you, me, and Maddie were just like, okay, so we're all getting into this, right? So all doing fleets, right? Like this, there's no downtime. Like the game comes out, we're playing later that day. And that's what happened. We all bought a shit ton of ships, starter sets. Terry was getting stuff from WizKids for Geek and Sundry. We were running events, planning events, playing games like crazy. And
yeah, I was going to say, the game is literally 1 month old. Yeah. And thus far, I mean, like, fuck. Like,
it's kind of dominated my gaming night for the last little while here. I'll give you a little background in terms of, like, why I didn't like X-Wing. Because we talked about this before where we were kind of doing This Week in Hobby. Mm-hmm. And I skipped This Week in Hobby. So why don't we just do that?
Hey, you're totally right. I think we were all just so excited to do some Star Trek.
So really, This Week in Hobby for me, I finished painting my Tarakians for Firestorm Armada. I had actually sent a message off to Spartan Games asking them if they were willing to have somebody come on the show to talk about their second edition release. And of course, you know, like it's a very professionally worded email. And at one point in the email, and I'm just like, and please be cautioned that this podcast is directed toward an adult audience, includes drinking, cursing, and adult themes. If that's not something you're comfortable with, we totally understand. And then they email back and they're just like, hey, thanks for all the interest. We're glad to hear that you're, you know, fostering Firestorm Armada in your community. Unfortunately, due to your adult themes, we're going to have to decline. But best luck to you and your podcast. And I'm just like, yeah, you know what? That happens a lot.
Yeah. Listen, I was still that is our usual, like, I am so used to this happening kind of thing. Like, that was why when we actually did get, like, Dan Abnett and Graham McNeil, I was just like, clearly they've never listened to us.
Well, and I mean, in both cases, we asked them before the podcast started, you know, hey, we curse, we drink, we blah, blah, blah. If you're not too comfortable with that, we can tone it down and we'll just make sure we're not doing that for the podcast when you're on. And I think both their replies were just like, fuck that, let's do this. You know, like they were very, for them, it wasn't a, you know, a commercial thing. It was very much just like talking about the stuff that they do and you know, being candid and enjoying themselves. But anyways, outside of Firestorm Armada, I finished painting all of my Star Trek Attack Wing stuff for that event that we ran last week. Mm-hmm. And since then have been feverishly poring over every aspect of the game. What about you, Nathan?
Yeah, so like I said, I played some Attack Wing at your little sort of mini tournament, month one of the Operation thing. And we'll talk about what that is when we're talking about the game, because I think that's part of the reason why it's so excellent. So I got a couple games. I guess I got 4 games in over that weekend. I've already signed up for 2 more tournaments, one on Tuesday and one the following week on literally the last day of the month. So I was like, well, I guess it still qualifies technically.
Yep.
But other than that, I have been painting Space Marines, actually, of all things. So.
Yep. And our model of the week apparently amped you up.
Oh my God. Yeah. Like that was the thing is like, I have been putting like 5 minutes here and there into like this Iron Hands army. And I'm always just like, they're Black Marines, they're whatever. And yeah, the moment I saw like the Ferris Manus come out this morning, I was just like, Yeah, thank God I have the day off, because I'd have fucking called in sick anyway, and I just sat and started painting like mad, and I got five done so far, and I'm hoping to finish the rest of my tactical squad before the weekend's out.
So what did you end up going with? Are you doing the edge highlighting, or did you do the washes?
I kind of did a combination of dry brushing and edge highlighting. I was going to put a wash on, but I felt that it would wash out too much of the dry brushing, because I did a very, like, it's a heavy dry brush, but a very dark color over top of it. So that's why I'm just like, if I were to do a black wash over this, I don't think you'd be able to see it at all. But no, like I said, I think it looks great. And in terms of effort put in, like I said, I've painted five start to finish today. So they come together quick. We just put on Star Trek Deep Space Nine and started fucking. I'm not even kidding, man. Like,
Oh,
we
dude,
are
I know. I'm
watching
watching
Star Trek.
Enterprise.
I was gonna say we are watching Star Trek because we are on such a Star Trek binge right now. And I'm just painting Space Marines.
It's ridiculous, man. It's
Oh, I was gonna
absolutely
say Terry has
ridiculous.
also decided, because we just watched the House of Quark,
Yep.
that she's gonna use the Ferengi cat, like one captain, it on a Klingon ship, and just be like, no, he's from the House of Quark.
Fair enough.
It works.
All right, so Star Trek Attack Wing. The X-Wing game mechanics were purchased by WizKids, and WizKids took the mechanics, altered them slightly for Star Trek, and then started pumping out models for Star Trek. Now, one of the bonuses of this is that WizKids, who does HeroClix, already had essentially a Star Trek HeroClix game and all of the molds ready for these models. So there's very, very few models that they actually had to mold new things for. The majority of the stuff that we're getting is just their old molds redone for this game. And essentially the mechanics that it uses. When I played X-Wing for the first time, it was really a big issue of scale and just like fleet sizes, right? Like they basically would say play 100 points, you basically would get three starfighters, or you would get maybe four TIE fighters if you could fit it and you didn't take any characters, right? There was a ton of tokens, there was a ton of cards to go with it. It was kind of just like really daunting to look at it. Now, when I played through the game for the first time, it was just kind of like, damn, like I can't even believe how much this game, like how involved this game is. And when you play it, you don't really feel like it's a fast-paced, space battle with fighters. It kind of feels a lot slower. But I like the movement, and I like the way that the dice mechanics worked, and I like the way that you could do a little bit of list building and have some fun with it. But of course, the big issue with it is they only ever have had two waves of releases. So
Well, yeah, because Wave 3 just
yes,
came
Wave
out,
3
and that's
just
after
came
a
out.
year.
And one of the big issues with them is that they can't keep things in stock. Talking to people that I know who play the game and people who are trying to sell it, they've basically said, oh, yeah, well, you can't buy X-Wings. You can't buy these because, like, this ship, and this ship are just completely unavailable. They're just not making them anymore. So you better go eBay that shit. Right, like it's very clear that they're not able to support the demand for the game. So when Star Trek came out, I already kind of knew what the mechanics were like, and instantly it was like, yes, that's perfect. That's going to be really, really great for that gaming system. And of course, Star Trek, unlike Star Wars, when you're talking about like galaxy class starships like the Enterprise, there's so many different types in Star Trek that like you could just keep making ships forever and almost never run out of ships to make. Whereas in Star Wars, if you're talking about just fighters, there's maybe eight in the main movies. There's probably another 20 to 30 in the extended universe that may actually be worth making models for. And they just released an extended universe model, and it was like a weird choice. It was just like, well, why'd they do that one? Like, I don't get why they did that. Like, of all the ships they could have made, they went with that extended universe ship. Like, that doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. So they've kind of made really, really weird decisions with the game. So it's hard to get behind it when you're talking about like one release a year of three or four ships, right? Whereas WizKids, as you said earlier, what's so amazing about them is when the game launched, the starter kit has three ships in it. You get a Romulan warbird, you get a Klingon battle cruiser, and you get a Federation galaxy class starship, so the Enterprise. And each expansion pack for each different faction had two additional ships. So most fleets have three ship options that they can take at this point. The Dominion have two because they're not in the starter kit.
Yeah.
And we are already expecting the Wave 2 release in October, which is about October 16th.
Pretty much the middle of October, yeah. We're going to get Wave 2 releases. And I'm not sure about the X-Wing ones, but I'm fairly certain that the Star Trek waves are smaller. Like they're not getting as much new brought into them, but they're also quite regular. So in October, we are getting one new ship for each faction.
Mm-hmm.
In 2 months later in December, we're getting one new ship for each faction. 2 months after that in February, we're getting one new ship for each faction. So that will bring the total number of ships for everyone save Dominion up mm-hmm. to six. And Dominion will be at five,
yeah,
which is still fine.
Totally fine.
You know, because it kind of puts everyone on a nice even playing field. And what I really like about it is even though, okay, so we know that we're getting these regular releases, right now WizKids with the launch of Attack Wing is doing a worldwide campaign.
Organized play is what they call it.
Yeah, organized play. It's basically a worldwide campaign where any store or gaming group can kind of sign up to host events and
purchase a prize pack.
Yeah, purchase a prize pack, and then every month they've got different ships coming out. So in addition to the ships that they have released, the prize for each month is different. So, I mean, month one was a Ferengi ship, and Ferengi don't even have anything outside of that one That's ship right. right now. Then we're going to get, a bird of prey, a Klingon bird of prey in the second month. We're going to get a Romulan ship. Then we're going to get a Federation ship, then we're getting special Dominion fighters, and then Federation fighters. So every month is providing a ship that, as far as I can tell, will only be available if you win it in one of these events.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they may be released sometime, further down the road, but
they will be released sometime further down the road. The big thing is that the special edition ships that you're getting for the prizes for the organized play will typically have characters on them that you will not be able to get from like the standard packages that will be released. So like next month's organized play prize is Martok on a bird of prey. So there's a named special character bird of prey, which you're not going to get in the standard bird of prey package. And you get Martok as a captain, which is Chancellor Martok as opposed to Captain Martok or something like that. So he's got better stats and better abilities to go with him. And you're only going to get that if you won the prize pack for the next month, right? So very, very interesting stuff. Some cool exclusives that you can get your hands on. They're not hard to get your hands on, to say the least. You just have to get out there and play, win some games, and there's a good chance you're going to win one of those things. I think in our area, pretty much everyone who really wanted one got one. Right, like I think for the most part, everyone was able to get in there and play games and win and some prizes and get what they were looking for. Few people probably missed out, but people who lose don't deserve anything. Okay, Aww. So let me break this down. Let me break this down for you guys. The way that the rules are played in this game is it is very similar to Warhammer 40,000, very similar to your typical turn-based tabletop game. It is not like Lord of the Rings or like Firestorm Armada, where you're just taking turns one after another, activating ships and going through their process. There's a movement segment where everybody moves, and then there's a shooting segment where everybody shoots, and then there's essentially your end phase. The way that it's not like 40K is that it's basically everyone's taking their turn at the same time, right? You're not taking turns, but you're going in a specific order. It's based on captain skill is typically the order that you're going in. The higher the captain skill is typically the better. It means that you get to move last and shoot first, which is very advantageous for you. Okay. All movement in this game is done with movement templates. So basically what you do is you have this little movement wheel for your ship. Like say you've got your Klingon battlecruiser. And you're like, oh, okay, I'm going to hide my movement on this movement wheel, and he's going to do like a hard three maneuver. You then put the movement template face down, and you wait for your opponent to finish. Once everyone's finished, Whoever has the lowest captain skill will then move that ship first by flipping over their little movement wheel and saying, here's what I did, right? So if something that your opponent does, because they move before you do, kind of fucks up your game, there's no turning back. You got to deal with the choices that you've made. But because you move last, you kind of get to know where everyone else is going to be instead of kind of having to guess, right? You can look at a ship's position and say, okay, well, all he can really do is go forward, turn left or turn right. So I'm safe if I turn this way. I'm guaranteed that I'm safe, right? And so that's kind of one of the perks of what you're doing. What's great about it is that it plays in a snap and literally like you burn through the movement phase in no time. It really, really is cool. And there's a lot of movement templates to choose from. So you don't feel like you're confined, like you're playing on a hex board or something like that. And I think that that's probably one of the biggest selling features for the game right now is just the way the movement phase work. Nathan?
I agree. I think that movement in this game is so much easier than movement in Warhammer. Okay, I've got all of my preset templates. I get to do, you know, I spin my dial on what it is that I want to do. I, you know, kind of hide it. I put it on my ship card and wait for the activation phase to be able to do it. And you're right. It's fucking fast. Because, I mean, like, at this point, you know, the organized play event is running at 100 points, which means that you basically get three ships. I think every single fleet that was at your event for all eight players, everyone had a three
ship. Everyone was using three ships. Yeah, the most you can use right now is five, and that's five with no captain upgrades and no weapon or tech or crew upgrades.
It's basically, I thought you could get seven of the tiny, tiny Romulan ones if you did exactly what you just said.
Yeah, right.
I have no any upgrades, if you do weapons, nothing.
Like, captains. There's a couple of small ships you can get away with it, but typically what you're going to see at 100 points is 3 to 4.
Yeah, absolutely. So when you look at it, it's just like, basically it means that there are going to be 6 to 8 ships that have to move. It's always done in the same sequence. So it even, like, you know, your first turn is when you're just like, well, I have this skill. Do you have anything like it? Oh, great. So you figure that order out and then it's automatic, right? I know, as a Dominion player, I know that all three of my ships move, then all three of your ships move. Mm-hmm. That's just what's going to happen. You know, but I know my order, I know all those things. And so there's even some strategy towards that movement. Sure, my guys shoot last, but because I get to move first, I do have some serious opportunities to kind of screw with you and disrupt your plan and put your ships out of position. So I find that that's really where the movement of the game is brilliant. Because, you know, as you said, a high command skill is great, but I can still kind of get away with having a really low command skill if I'm building for that. If I know that I'm going to shoot last, I can build kind of a disruption fleet in order to muck with your movement, for, you know, split your fleet down the middle, cutting ships off, doing certain things like that, which is really good. And again, there's no tape measures, there's no quibbling over half an inch. It's literally, you know, I flip it over, I'm doing a hard three, I find the hard three counter, I put it in its slot in the front of the base of my ship, push, you know, hold it down, move my ship so that the back end is touching the other side of the template.
Right.
Boom. Movement is done. It's super fast, super easy. Yep. And like you said, the game itself plays incredibly quickly. Like you should be done in a half an hour. If not, it's probably because you're very new, your opponent's very new. But like, you know, if you've got a couple games under your belt, You know, you're fast on knowing where you want to put your ships, the game is done.
I think the longest game I've had so far has been about an hour and a half. But typically, you know, you get together in a night where that one night might just be that one game of Warhammer, that one 3-hour game of Warhammer, whereas you would probably get 3 games of Attackwing in, which is fun. You know, I mean, again, it's a lot smaller. It doesn't feel quite so grand. There's definitely room for scaling to much larger sized games, which I think kind of we'll start seeing more and more outside of the organized play, where people will start bringing, you know, bigger fleets to really kind of get the grand epic battles feeling out of it. But right now it really does align very well to the theme of Star Trek. I mean, in Star Trek, in most instances, when we're not talking about DS9, it's like one ship versus 2 to 3. You know, or like one ship versus one ship over and over and over again. Because that's just, space is a big place, okay? You just don't have that many fucking ships. So it fits. It's fine. Whereas in X-Wing, it was always just like, really? I've got 3 TIE fighters? That doesn't feel right. I feel like that's not enough TIE fighters.
Well, and again, you know, and I really did feel like that was a big problem with X-Wing as well, because you watch Star Wars, you know, the battle at Yavin 4 has hundreds of ships aside, you know, and it's just like, and then you play a game of X-Wing and you're just like, woo, five guys go, you know, and it, like I said, it just, it never really fit the scale of the Star Wars universe appropriately, because again, you know, whenever you had big space battles in Star Wars, it was always giant fucking cruisers and big fleets of cruisers on either side, each one sending out 10 to 50 fighters. And so it was just like, you'd have hundreds of fighters and, you know, dozens of ships per side. And then you play a game of X-Wing and you're just like, eh.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. All right. So after you do your movement, immediately after moving your ship, you are then able to take an action with your ship. Now, actions are very, very simple. Don't get scared. It's not like D&D or other role-playing games where you have so many actions per turn and free actions and so on and so forth. It's very simple. You get to take one action per turn. There are cards and abilities that allow you to take multiple. However, for the standard ship, it's one action per turn. The only actions they can take are the ones that are pictured on their base. So on the base of the ship, it'll show you the three, four, or however many actions you have available to you. These range from evasive maneuvers, lock-on, cloak, sensor echo, battle stations, things of that nature. And they all have different rules that are very effective in the game for specific types of things. And different fleets have different actions that they can take. So it's not just an issue of each ship having its own stats that are unique and individual and kind of give you an idea of either what their strengths are and what their weaknesses are. You actually also have to look at their action bar to see, okay, well, what kind of actions can they perform, right? The Romulans can do evasives and lock-on, which is pretty basic for every single fleet has evasive and lock-on. But they can also do cloak and they can do sensor echo, which are two very, very useful abilities for defense and maneuverability. Whereas the Dominion have evasive and lock-on, and the only other action they have is scan. Which is a nice little ability, but, you know, sometimes you feel like it's just not quite enough. And then you've got the Klingons have basically the same as the Romulans. Federations have scan, and they also have battle stations on top of evasive and lock-on, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, Federation all have battle stations.
And then basically every new ship that comes out will have a different set of actions. It's not specific to the faction. I know that right now there is a Klingon ship that does not have cloak but does have battle stations, which is kind of interesting because it's like an OG style, old school Klingon ship. So basically, once you do your actions, these actions have different abilities that are going to allow you to either attack better, defend better, or, you know, roll dice better, right? And they're all very useful in their own different way, and that's kind of one of the nice things about being a good player in this game is kind of knowing which actions to use and at what time. Nathan?
Sorry, I'm just trying to wait for as many awkward silences as I can get away with on this episode. You're absolutely right. I do find the fact that with actions, it's really where the game comes to life. You know, movement is simple. You know, you can fuck up your movement. My very first game of Attack Wing, I played bumper cars with my own ships for like three straight turns. Where I was just not like, great. No, this is not a good thing to do.
Tell them what happens when you bumper cars.
When your ship makes contact with another ship, friendly or otherwise, you cannot take an action. And actions is really where the game is won or lost, in my opinion. I mean, movement is going to set you up to be in a really good or a really bad position, depending on what you're doing. But it's how you use your actions that are going to really help you do it, because actions are everything. So in addition to what Lang just mentioned, where you've got all of your different options like target locks and cloak if you have a fleet that does it, or scan or battle stations or whatever, if you use a card ability, almost every time you have to disable that card, which means you just put a counter on it. The only way to use it ever again is to spend an action to take it off. Mm-hmm. So that is, like I said, kind of where the brilliance of this game system really comes on is, okay, I've moved my ships, I'm wherever. But then what action do I do? Do I re-enable my photon torpedoes? if I do, well, I don't have a lock on because I used it before. So now how am I going to shoot them? Or should I get the lock on, wait another turn to re-enable, or should I maybe do something more defensive? Mm-hmm. And so every single time you move your car, you know, you move your ship, you're trying to think, oh my God, what's going to happen? And that's why, you know, what Lang was saying, the high command skill is really good, because if you move last, you know where every single ship is. You know if you're going to have that firepower. You know if you're going to get fucked. If you're going to get hosed, you can take a defensive action and try to weather the storm. But that's, like I said, that's where it really comes down to is, am I going to use an action that my captain has, which is why I bought him as my captain? Am I going to use one of my tech upgrades or weapons? Am I going to use one of the ones my ship comes with, like battle stations? You know, and realistically, I find that the difference between someone who is good at attack wing and someone who's great at attack wing is how well can you use your actions? Are you using them correctly? Are you using them in the right situations? You know, because again, if you move your ship and you're just like, I'm going to be, you know, I'm going to use an evasion counter so that way I'm harder to hit, and I'm just like, great, I wasn't going to fucking shoot at him anyway.
Right, exactly.
You know, it's just like, well, now you're kind of, like I said, you're at a disadvantage because you wasted an action.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's why, like I said, I think the game is very, very clever when it comes to actions, because you have to declare an action the moment your ship is moved. So when I move my shitty ass command skill 1 or 2 Dominion captain, I'm going to move him, and I have to declare his action then and there. So I have no idea where anyone else is. I have no idea where they're going to be. I don't know what they're planning. But here I am. I have to decide what action am I going to take.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why you really have to have a good, firm plan in place. Because if not, you're going to get hosed on it, where you're just like, I'm going to try to target lock. There, I got a target lock. And then he moves all of his ships in and lights you up. And you're just like, shit, I should have done something defensive.
Well, or that, or you get a target lock on him and he just flies past you. And you're like, well, that was a waste. Can't shoot him with it. You're like, you can hold a target lock, but if you can't shoot him, you can't use it. Right? You can shoot other targets, but you can't do anything with it, which is unfortunate. Okay, so after you do your actions, that brings you then into the shooting phase. And then, as we said before, highest captain skill shoots first, and then you just work your way down the line. This is really when captain skill, you feel it. There's no, it's good to have a lower captain skill kind of if you're good at what you do shit. You just get shot, and it kind of sucks, because one of the issues with the current points level that we're playing at now is that it is possible to completely have one of your ships just blapped off the table before it can even shoot, and then you're just at such a major disadvantage, it's very, very hard to recover. So at the moment, the way that the rules are put together, the way that they're written, it's kind of, you have to be very, very, very careful about how you commit your ships, because it can really blow up in your face, especially if you're playing a fleet like Klingons. Because Klingons have so many goddamn attack dice that if you get in close and you make that mistake, all three ships will just focus one of your ships with a low captain skill and just take it off the table before you can even shoot it. And that can be a real pain in the ass when you're trying to be winning games and you are starting the game essentially outnumbered. The ship that you had was essentially doing nothing. So it's very, very problematic. This is kind of why I'm thinking that the game is going to go to higher points values eventually. But we'll talk about that a little bit more later.
Yeah, I was going to leave you the awkward silence, but then I wanted to talk too much that I was like, damn it. No, fine. All right. Damn it.
Save it. Save it.
Save it.
All right.
You're right. I mean,
shooting phase.
Highest captain skill goes first. It's a huge advantage. Like, you know, as much as I want to talk about how your low captain's skill lets you kind of derp about and try to screw them out of an action, at the end of the day, God damn, does a low captain skill suck? I mean, all three of my games. Or not all three, but in one of my games, all three of my ships had to move first before all three of my opponent's ships.
Mm-hmm.
Every one of his ships was better than me. And that's, like I said, that just sucks.
That's Dominion.
Yeah. Woo, Dominion.
We'll talk about the factions a little bit more.
Yeah. You know, so it's just like, it sucked so bad because I'd move all three of my ships. He'd move up. He'd pound a ship and destroy it. Like, I had two ships that never got a shot off. because they're just destroyed first. Because, oh, look, it was Klingons I was playing.
Mm-hmm.
Pulled the win out anyway, because...
Yeah, which was hilarious.
Because go Breen. Go Breen. They are the winningest part of the Dominion. You know, but like I said, that's the biggest problem, where it's just like, when you are going last, you feel it. So you either have to embrace it and build for it, where you're going to try to play a disruption fleet that's going to rob him of attack dice in some way or another, or boost your own survivability so you can survive to punch back. But that's where it comes down to. And, you know, honestly, I think that, again, where this game is great when you compare it to a game like Warhammer is, you know, again, when we're going to break down a round of shooting in Warhammer, I'm rolling to hit, then I'm rolling to wound, then you're rolling armor saves, and then you're removing models, right? So you've got three different steps. You know, and I've got to always compare how many models do I have, how many are in range, blah, 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 blah. Attack wing, again, it's all about streamlining it. So I check, is my ship in range? Great, awesome. I now look at my card, either the card in front of me corresponding to the ship or the ship itself, because it has its stats on it. I grab the, you know, I grab the number of dice it says, and they're color-coded, red to red. I roll them off. Any hits that I get, he grabs as many green dice as he gets, rolls them off, and then we compare. Oh, I got one more hit than you got evades. That's one hit. That's that ship's firing, moving on to the next one.
Yeah.
And that's what really helps keep the game moving along. At no point do you ever get bogged down in reference materials, in, you know, comparison charts.
Am I at long range? Am I shooting multiple shots? Are you skirmish? Are you in a hill? Yeah. Am I on a hill?
Jesus Christ. I mean, like, for fuck's sakes, when I played my Wood Elves, I forgot. Like, one of the reasons I stopped playing them was when it would be shooting, where it's just like, all right, so these three are in long range, so they're going to need fours. Okay, and their strength is different, so I've got to resolve this now. Then these ones are in short range, but so is this guy who's at a different ballistic skill. And you're just like, oh, my fucking God. Why does it take 5 minutes to explain how 10 guys with bows are shooting?
Right. Well, okay, so here's the breakdown of the shooting phase. There are three range bands for shooting. That is all. There are 4-inch range bands. At range band 1, you get a bonus red dice. At range band 3, the person you're shooting gets a bonus green evade dice. That's it. That's as simple as it gets. Every ship has the same range. That's it. I mean, you have to enjoy that. All of the dice that you're rolling in this game are 8-sided dice, and you're not rolling numbered dice. You are rolling dice with little pictures on them for hits, criticals, evades, battle stations, things of that nature. It's literally that simple. Now, anytime you do damage, if the ship has shields, you just drop a shield token off the ship. You just take it and throw it back in your box. If they don't have any more shields, it hits the hull. Now, when you talk about the cards, the ships have four primary stats. It's attack dice, agility, hull, and shield. And it's as simple as it sounds. If it says three shields, you have three shield tokens. Ta-da! If you have five hull, it means that you can take five damage cards on your ship. Now, this is one of the things that I really enjoy about the game mechanics. Damage cards is a deck of cards that you shuffle before the game. Your opponent cuts them. And then anytime you take damage, you pull a damage card off of your deck, your damage deck. You don't share the decks. And you go and you put it on your ship. If it's a critical, you put the damage card on your ship face down. If it's a critical, you put the damage card on your ship face up. It still counts as a hull damage on your ship, but there's an additional critical effect, which will be something like a warp core breach or a console fire or maneuvering errors or any number of just the fucked up
and just got killed.
Any number of fucked up things that just ruin your day. And I mean, I have to laugh because in a lot of games, like, you'll take criticals and it's like, oh, whatever, I didn't even need that. Like Firestorm Armada, when you take criticals, you're just like, who gives a fuck? Oh no, no point defense. I'm still in a squad with point defense. Who gives a shit? You know, whereas in this game, when you get a critical and you flip that card, it is never a good thing.
No,
it always screws up your day.
I was gonna say there was only one card, because it was on my little, like, throwaway filler ship, where it was just, like, with my free captain of one, where it's just like, your captain is dead, and your ship now has a command skill of one. I'm like, joke's on you, asshole.
I already have one.
I was going to say, that was...
Another fat Cardassian steps up to the plate.
Because he thought it was the buffet line.
That's like, right. That's really what he was next in line. He thought
I was going to say, but again, if you have, like, Picard, and you draw that one where it's like, well, looks like command skill 9, Picard is dead.
Yeah.
That fucking hurts.
Yeah, or like there's cards where it's just like, you cannot perform any actions listed on your actions bar. And you're like, well, that makes my ship useless. Yeah. God damn. And then you have to like roll dice to try to fix it every turn and like it eats up your action. No, there's some really bad stuff in there. So in the attack phase, there's also secondary weapons. These are weapon upgrades that you purchase for your ship at an additional points cost according to whether or not your ship can take weapon upgrades. And they're always referred to as secondary weapons. Secondary weapons do not gain bonuses for being in range band 1. But your opponent also does not gain bonuses if I'm shooting at you from range band 3. This is photon torpedoes are a good example of a secondary weapon. I can shoot them at long range. You don't get any bonus defense dice. But if I'm shooting them point blank, I don't get any bonus attack dice. But normally photon torpedoes is like 5 dice, which is a good handful of dice.
Yes.
Okay. I mean,
it's not Romulan good.
It's not Romulan or Klingon good, but no, it's pretty good. So that's basically the attack phase. Once a ship takes damage cards equal to its hull value, it's destroyed. You just take it off. I mean, it's like I said, it's literally as simple as that. There's a lot of subtle nuances to the way that ships are built and how much they cost and what their stats are like. But, you know, you guys can read. If you guys are interested in the game, you'll take a look and kind of see the differences between the various armies, various factions. We'll talk about them as we kind of get through the rules here. All right. So once everybody's done attacking, the turn is essentially over. You're in the end phase. You remove all of the tokens off of the table. Basically, every time you perform an action, you'll put a token beside your ship. The notable exceptions are the auxiliary power token and the cloak token if you didn't shoot. But for the most part, you just clean the board up and then you grab your turning wheels and you go ahead and you do it again. And that's basically the rules of the game. That's about as far as it goes. The rule book itself is tiny. It is 28 pages long. And these are little bitty pages with pictures. So, I mean, sitting down and reading through this rule book, it takes no time whatsoever. Click. Click.
Click.
Click. Click.
But no, you're right. I mean, like, when we were doing the Space Marine fucking codex, that is like 200 pages.
Mm-hmm.
This one is nothing. The rules are super, or rather, the rule book is super small. Honestly, I find it a little bit confusing to read, but as soon as you play like one game of Attack Wing, you're just like, oh, I get it.
Yeah.
And that's really what it is, because you're like, tokens, and then what?
Yeah, it's strange the way that they explain the mechanics, but once you actually see the mechanic is in action, you get it pretty quickly. It's pretty, pretty straightforward. All right, so that is pretty much the game. You're typically playing on a 3x3 board, but you can play on any size board you want. The game scales really, really well. One of the cool things about ships that we didn't really touch on is that each ship has its own maneuvering wheel, its own turning and movement wheel, so that you do actually get a little bit of really cool theme and, again, pros and cons for every type of ship out there for the points that you're paying. Cardassians are notoriously slow and lumbering.
But, I am flying a brick.
But they have a 180-degree forward fire arc, whereas most other ships in the game only have a 90-degree forward fire arc.
I was going to say, and if I'm not mistaken, them and the Galaxy class are the only two ships right now with a 5 forward movement.
That's right.
So it's just like,
that is their bonus, is that they can burn, they can fucking hit the gas and burn forward very, very quickly.
Yeah, like that's, you know, and that's exactly the trade-off with them, where it's just like they've got this gigantic forward firing arc. 180 degrees is huge, and it's better than every ship that I ran into on the weekend.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because you didn't. I think the only other ships are the Miranda and the Constitution class for Federation. And they're so small and light that they feel like nothing. They feel like you just blow them away.
Yeah, I was looking at the Miranda where I was just like, three hull and two shields, huh?
And two attack dice.
Yeah, and you're like, woo.
Yeah, that's why you put photon torpedoes on them and just basically run around doing photon torpedo actions all the time.
Or you just take a whole swack of them, because I was like, hey, you could take like 5 of these bitches with Captain Tyrell on one and just be like, plus one
just defense go for dice it. Well, to they, everyone. They have 2 agility on each of them, so they're actually.
And that's quite why cool. The plus one defense dice from Captain Tyrell?
It's like a half a cloak. All right, so let's talk a little bit about the models. The models are pretty nice for the most part in terms of the way that they are molded. I feel like they have enough detail. However, the paint jobs are fucking horrendous.
Yeah,
I mean, this is a pre-painted model game, in case you are not aware. But you will feel like it was you went and purchased one of those "We'll paint your army for a dollar a model" companies, and all they really did was like base coat it and paint the shoulder pads red, and then send them back to you. That's how this feels.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, you know, say what we will about Star Wars Attack Wing. Star Wars.
Star Wars Attack Wing. Is it called Attack Wing?
It is called Attack. They are both called Attack Wing.
Oh, that's not confusing at all.
Nothing. No, not at all. So with Star Wars Attack Wing, you look at the models and it's just like, you could do better, but you would spend a decent amount of time in order to really pretty them up. Like they are well painted. The sculpts are very nice. You look at Star Trek Attack Wing, and the first thought is, you're like, oh my god, they have the Defiant? Oh my god, it looks like ass. And it's just like
easily the worst model they've put out so far.
Oh, I know, right? You know, and it's just like, so you absolutely want to go home, and you want to put a coat of paint on. And I mean, honestly, they paint fast, because as Lang said,
they paint really
the sculpts
fast.
Themselves have a lot of detail on it. And honestly, even if all WizKids did was just do whatever half-ass thing they're doing, and then give them like a dip and flick...
Yes.
That would improve tremendously.
Oh, yes. I mean, like how they wash. Look. It's amazing what a wash does on these models. And you see so many people post on the internet. They've got like the Klingon battle cruisers, and they're just these bright fucking lime green with red and like bright yellow lights. And it's like, oh my God, why is it so bright? And then, yeah, you just hit it with like a black or like a gray wash, or you hit it with like a dark green wash, and bam, it looks 100 times better. For mine, I did I completely rebase coated them. I completely washed them. I did a couple of highlights. I repainted all of the lights, the colors, and the phaser emitters on the Cardassians. Mm-hmm. And then I even did a couple of like squadron markings on them just to tell them apart on my cards. And it was absolutely worth it. And it only took about an hour per ship. So really nothing. You know, yeah, and if you're doing them assembly line style, or even if you're just hitting them with a base coat and a dry brush, they're going to look 100 times better.
Yeah, like that's the thing is Terry... Terry repainted her Enterprise, and doing so, she literally just did a base coat of Fortress Gray, then she did a watered-down black wash, then she did, I think, a dry brush of like Fortress Gray with Skull and picked out some details. And it looks outstanding. Like, it's just like she even did a side by side between the this is what you get in your starter set and this is what I did. Mm-hmm. Where, in her own words, I spent more time waiting for all of the steps to dry.
To dry. Yeah. Same for me.
Than I did painting it.
Yep.
And again, like, it's so much better. I personally haven't sat down to paint my ships yet. Problem is I was actually going to today, and then I saw Ferris Manus, and I was just like, nope, I already got the painting station set up. I'm grabbing me some Marines.
And there's some weird baffling paint choices too. Like, they did the Klingons in that lime green, and then like all the new Klingon models they released are like this metallic green that actually looks pretty cool.
Yeah.
But then you put it on the table beside everything else and you're like, damn, fuck. I wish everything was metallic green. Like, why isn't everything metallic green?
And there was a fire sale on Baby Blue because every Federation ship, with the exception of the original Enterprise, is Baby Blue.
And that's just the color of the plastic they injected. That's not even like the paint that they put on top of it. But yeah. So as we said, the models... well sculpted, nice detail for the size. For the money that you pay, more than happy with what you're getting. $15 for an expansion pack includes one ship, a ton of tokens, and a bunch of cards. So it's not just the ship that you're paying for, but it's pretty nice. And if you take the time to repaint them, they're really, really cool. Here's the thing that I would like to point out. What I love about these models more than anything is the stand and the game card that comes with it. What I would not give for Spartan Games to look at this shit and go, why the fuck haven't we been doing this for the last 3 years? Because the way that the stands work, They've got little notches in them so that you can only put the plastic stand into the peg a specific way. And there's a little arrow on the bottom of the peg saying, here's where your forward arc is.
Yeah.
And as long as you line those up, your ship will always be facing forward. And it'll always slide in perfectly. You don't even have to glue it. It works so fucking well. And it's just like, where has this technology been? The bases for Firestorm Armada are so goddamn frustrating. But what's even better than that is, like you said, Nathan, you can either look at your ship card for the ship stats, which will also include the special abilities and the crew tech and weapon upgrades that it can take, as well as its points and so on and so forth. Or you can just look at the base of the ship, because the base of the ship will have all of its stats as well as all of its actions, which is fucking amazing. Because it just makes it so much easier for playing a game. You're not constantly referencing the cards. You're not constantly referencing the book. You can just kind of keep going.
Well, and even then, it's really, really good for your opponent. Because, I mean, you know, when I was at the height of my, like, going to Warhammer tournaments, I had every book memorized, and I could look at your model.
My model,
how they were armed. Your model. Mm-hmm. Well, now. You know, and that was one of the things that I could do. But, you know, I can't do that anymore. Not with Warhammer. There's so much new shit that's come out. And yeah, I've read it all, but I don't know what this does or what that does. And that's the beauty of this kind of system with a game like Attack Wing or Star Trek Attack Wing is I can literally look at your ship and just be like, oh, it's got 5 attack. Jesus, I don't want to get into range band one of you this turn because, mm-hmm. Jesus Christ, you'll get 6. You know, and at the same time, I can just be like, do I want to shoot at you? Well, you're cloaked and you have a 2 evade and you're range band 3? No, not a fucking chance. Mm-hmm. You know, you get 7 defense dice, though. I get 3 attack. Like, what the fuck is the point of this? So it's just like, mm-hmm. it's really, really good for you as a player to always know what your ships can do. I must be drunk because I just keep hitting my
microphone. I know, over and over again.
Oh, my God. See, I am a hand talker, and just because I'm alone down here drinking in the basement does not mean that the hands aren't going.
We can constantly hear you just clickety-clacking while I'm talking.
It's true. But yeah, like that's the thing where it's just like, it's also good for your opponent. So it's just like, you know, you and I play Dominion. They're the only fleet that is not in the starter set. So in order to play a Dominion fleet, you're going to, you know, I have to go and buy all nothing but expansion ships, put it all together. You may not be familiar with what those ships do, but you can easily look at my token and just be like, wow, 4 hull and 3 shields. I'm going to have to shoot at that a lot because mm-hmm. it's kind of durable.
Yeah, well, the ship stats are very well designed in the sense that they give you a good basic understanding of what it's going to take a ship down or what kind of firepower a ship's going to churn out. But when you start looking at like the upgrade cards, the crew upgrades, tech upgrades, weapon upgrades, there's no telling what's coming your way. And that's kind of what's fun about the game. All right, so let's talk about the various factions that are available to play right now. As we said, the starter kit comes with Federation, Klingons, and Romulans. As well, you can buy expansion kits for the Dominion. So the Dominion have access to 2 ships right now. Everyone else has access to 3. Let's talk about the fleet that you and I both play, because why would you play anything else? Dominion.
I know. Have you ever watched Deep Space
Nine? I've watched.
Why would you not? Why would you play anything other than Dominion?
I'm going to spoon all of my opponents. So basically, I always loved the Cardassians. It's one of those things for me that's just always been something about their fluff and like the characters that were in the show and the episodes where they were involved always just resonated very, very well with me. I loved just the way that they played them because it wasn't like Star Trek The Next Generation creating the Ferengi as the big bad, you know, where it was just like, wow, these guys are stupid. It was actually a well-designed bad guy race that you could actually get behind, that you weren't constantly going like, well, they're all just Hitlers. You know, like you just understood that it was a military-driven government. Everything was run by the military and they had their secret service and all this kind of stuff. And it's like, yes, that's all very, very cool. I like that. On top of that, I always loved the ships. I always just thought that they were a very cool design. They were the design that reminded me most about like, yep, this is space. In space, who gives a fuck? right? You design for space, not you design for prettiness or you design for aerodynamics.
Absolutely.
Everything has fucking wings. And these things are just like, no, man, 180 degree forward arc. It's fucking space.
Yeah, you know, and that's exactly it is, you know, when you looked at the Federation aesthetic, everything was sleek and aerodynamic. And you're always just like, really, space? And
Same with the Klingons. Everything's birds. It's all got wings.
Yeah, you know, but you're right. The Cardassian ships were always just like, no, it's just a flying stick. Mm-hmm. Why would I have wings? Well, there's no friction. They look
like cobras, like snakes.
Well, yeah, I know. But again, like they were very like straight line kind of flaring out at the front because, again, it's space. There's no friction. There's no aerodynamics. It's not like we're ever going to bring this into Atmo. You know, so it's just like, yeah, absolutely. I have always been a fan of the Cardassian ships, like, aesthetically. But again, you know, once you start getting into the actual Dominion with, like, Jem'Hadar and everything else, like, I'm always just like, oh, they're just really fucking cool.
Absolutely. Okay, so let's talk about the actual faction themselves. Because we do not have as many ships, we do not have as many cards. And that is a huge detriment at this point in the game. We do not have any ship, or we don't have any captain with a captain skill higher than 6, which is very middle of the road compared to Picard, which is like a 9, and a lot of other fleets that have 7s, 8s, 9s, pretty much across
the board. Yeah, I was going to say, Romulan highest is 7 right now, Klingon highest is 8, Federation has 2 different 9s, and yes. Khan as an independent is an 8. So you've got lots and lots of really high command skills. Just nothing like that.
Nothing like that for the Dominion, unfortunately. We also
again, yet.
Right. So, okay, let's talk about the cons while we're talking about cons for the Dominion. The Dominion also really don't have any crew upgrades worth anything. They've got a Breen aid if you're playing a Breen ship, which gives you a bonus where if you roll a blank, it automatically counts as a hit when attacking. But it's worth 2 points, and it's dependent on you having run a scan action in your action action segment. And if you don't do that, the card does nothing. So you have to be very, very careful about how you're moving your ship and like whether or not you're getting actions off, whether or not you're able to do a scan or you have to do an evade or something. So it's the only good crew upgrade, 1 of 2, and it's not even working all the time. And we'll talk about crew upgrades more when we get to other fleets where, like, the crew upgrades are fucking baller ass. We're crazy game breaking shit. Here's
looking at you, Federation.
Yeah. when it comes to tech upgrades and weapon upgrades, the Cardassians have some very, very interesting things. But for the most part, they're all rather expensive or ship specific. And that's another big con for the Dominion. There's really not a whole lot you can do because if you want to take a certain upgrade, you have to take it on this ship because you can't take it anywhere else. And yeah, that really doesn't allow you to fleet build as much as other fleets are.
Yeah, absolutely. Because right now the Breen ship can't take a tech upgrade, which means that all of the Cardassian cards that you get, a Breen ship just can't equip because of the Cardassian ships. You get 3 cards, 2 of them are tech, so the Breen can't take it. And the third one specifically says that if it's a non-Cardassian ship, pay plus 5 points.
Right.
So you're just like, right.
It's not even a good card. It's not even a good weapon upgrade.
No, it really isn't.
It's shit. Do you know that if you only have 1 ship in your firing arc, you can't fire it?
Wow. That's
that was in the FAQ.
Okay,
they're like, so if I've got the forward weapons array, but I've only have 1 ship in my forward firing arc, can I fire it? And they're like, nope, you have to have 2. Yeah, all right. That's how balls it is.
Fantastic.
For five points.
Yeah, so like I said, you know, you've got that. And then on the flip side, the Breen ship's got a couple of weapons upgrade, you know, weapons options.
Great stuff. Great weapon upgrades.
Yeah, great stuff. They got photon torpedoes, which are fantastic. Those are also the only ones that you can fire in range band 1, because every other photon torpedo is range band 2 to 3 only. And then they've got a phenomenal energy dissipator weapon. And the energy dissipator is if you want to equip it to a non-Breen ship, plus 5 points. So again, you know, when you're building your Dominion fleet, you very much have to say, well, if I want this card, I need to take this ship. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like the energy dissipator has to go on a Breen ship. You know, these tech upgrades have to go on Cardassian ships because they cannot be equipped to Breen ships. And so it's just like it really is kind of shoehorning you into one direction right now. again, the game is a month old, so I will absolutely forgive them and give them a little bit of leeway, because I have no doubt in my mind that they designed these four fleets perfectly, you know, very well balanced. Everyone has all the tools. And then this is just how they decided to release it. I know that by February, when we get our second battleship, a big old Jem'Hadar heavy, which I'm looking forward to like mad, you know, great. At this point, we have a 5-ship fleet. We have 5 ships to choose from, 2 mids, 1 small, 2 heavies. We're going to have captains, we're going to have crew, we're going to have upgrades, we're going to have everything that we need to be competitive. So like I said, right now you play Dominion and you always just feel like there's like that bad taste in the back of your mouth where it's just like, don't get me wrong, I can win, but I have to play perfect or you have to fuck it up.
Right.
You know, or it's just like, because the deck is stacked against me. I don't have great crew. I don't have high command skill captains. Right. I don't have access to a heavy. I don't. So it's just like there are all these things that Dominion don't have yet. With that being said, I love them.
Well, with that being said, I love them as well. You know, I've done very well with my Dominion. Like I said, I think out of all the games I've played, I've only lost like 3 of them. It's been a lot of close calls. But for the most part, like, you can win with them. They're not terrible. The biggest pro for the Dominion is that their ships are very good middle-of-the-road ships. A lot of fleets right now don't have any middle-of-the-road ships. All they have is, like, big battleships and small ships, like the Federation, which is really frustrating for players because they feel like they need a good middle-of-the-road ship. The other great thing about the Dominion right now is that they have essentially the only real reusable nerfing technology. They play a huge denial game, where they have abilities that will make the ships that you're fighting against either completely useless or just not nearly as good as they should be. So you can essentially turn off their guns, or you can just make a ship do nothing for a turn with the energy dissipator. You've got, you know, electromagnetic pulses, which all do very, very interesting things, but it's essentially what keeps them afloat right now. And you can play like a 4-ship Dominion fleet where you just take like 4 Cardassian cruisers and just go for it. And it's a lot of firepower. They're all very good middle-of-the-road ships. And you can win games with it. But you have no captain skill. You have no weapon upgrades. So you're just going for sheer firepower and numbers. And it's a tricky game to play. And that's basically where the Dominion is right now. So let's talk about the Federation. Give us some of the cons for the Federation right now, Nathan.
Right now, I think the only 2 detriments to playing a Federation fleet that I can see right now would be, one, you don't have any middle of the road ships. You got your big old heavy galaxy class, and then you got 2 really light ships that don't put out a lot of firepower and can't really take any shots coming at you. So, you know, whereas the Dominion only has 2 really good, versatile middle, you know, mid-sized ships, Federation doesn't have any. The only other con that I would say is, from a maneuverability standpoint, they're kind of lacking, especially when you start comparing them to fleets like Romulans, which are highly mobile, Klingons, who are really mobile with lots of different movement options. So I would say that that's where Federation are lacking. I think the Defiant is going to patch both of those holes up, because the Defiant is going to be a highly maneuverable,
good middle of the road ship.
Good middle of the road ship. So I think that when the Defiant comes out, same thing with Excelsior. Yeah, absolutely. So I think when the Defiant comes out in middle of October, Federation patch up both of those holes. Excelsior in December is only giving them more options in that type of in that range. So that's going to be good news for them. But where Federation outshine everyone is pure fucking variety.
Well, yes. And then the biggest pro for the Federation right now is that they have basically the best captain in the game, and they have the best upgrades, crew, everything that you can get in the game. And you can really, really turn your ships into amazing ships with just the crew. I mean, when you just talk about what comes in the starter kit for the Enterprise D, you know, getting Picard, getting Geordi LaForge, getting O'Brien, getting Worf, Data, Riker. It's retarded. And then you go with the old Constellation class, the fucking Enterprise C, you know.
Or Kirk, the original OS Enterprise.
Right, exactly, right? Like, ridiculous. The cards that you get are so fucking good. They've got
I was gonna say, with that one, you basically get the entire OS crew. So now you're getting
Sulu, Kirk,
Spock, Sulu, Spock, Scotty,
which are all good, man. Spock is great. Scotty's great. Sulu's great. Like, every card they have is fucking awesome. Which is, you're basically spoiled for choice at that point, and you're really dependent on your cards making up for kind of the defect that you have to deal with right now with Federation. Really, I mean, the best way to go right now seems to be taking the Enterprise D, taking the Enterprise C, and then taking two Mirandas, and then just trying to gun through everything with, like, high captain skill and just really going for it. But even their captains, all of their captains have amazing abilities, which are really, really good. Whereas the Dominion, we do have captains, but all of our captains have shitty abilities, which really kind of licks balls. But anyways.
I was going to say, I don't know. I like my captain's ability, you know, with his command skill of 3.
Oh, yeah. You know, the one that lets me get one more defense dice. Hooray!
No, I was going to say, that's the when attacking, you can reroll one dice, and you're like, yeah, I guess.
Oh, Golden R. You know, for this, for a point less than Golden R costs, because he costs 2 points, that's how you can get Captain Terrell with his captain skill of 2, where everyone within range band one of him gets an additional defense dice.
Oh, I know. That's why I was like, I think you could run 5 Mirandas with Terrell on one and just be like, come at me, Brosif. I got 3 defense dice on everybody.
Yeah, try to shoot me at range. I get 4. Okay, so basically that's one of the big things for Federation right now. They've got a good arc of fire. They've got decent firepower if you're focusing on torpedoes. What's nice about them is you do actually have 2 different types of photon torpedoes that you can take. You can take the strength 5, 5 points photon torpedoes with the bonus, or you can take the cheaper strength 4 photon torpedoes with no bonus, and I think it's like 2 points cheaper. Mm. So you do actually get some really, really nice options there. All right, so let's talk about the Romulans.
Dirty power gaming Romulans.
The Romulans are probably the fleet that's on top right now, and the reason for that is that they have a great middle-of-the-road ship, and they have a great heavy ship. The Klingons also have this. However, the Romulans, just, you know, for the points that you're paying and for the crew upgrades that you get, they really, really do come out on top. Their biggest con is that they do not have great firepower unless you are using a lot of cards and a lot of abilities. So in the late game, when maybe he only has 1 ship left, it's going to feel like that ship is doing nothing. Usually that's the way that you beat Romulans, is that you take out their little linchpin ship, and as soon as that linchpin ship is gone, they basically do nothing for the rest of the game. However, it's very, very hard to take that linchpin ship out because they have cards that stop you from doing that. Not to mention the fact that they can cloak and they can sensor echo, which means it's going to be very hard to shoot them if you were playing against a very experienced captain.
And they've got lots of defense. You know, the biggest thing I think for Romulans right now is they survive like no one else. Mm-hmm. They have cloak, which lets them, you know, trade shields for a ton of defense dice. Every one of their ships is,
two defense dice,
which is huge.
More than anybody right now.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just like, you know, Romulans right now, they're the hardest to kill race. And then you combine it with the fact that they can just combo all their cards and abilities to throw out top-tier firepower. Like, it's just like, even Klingons are just like, I wish I could get that many attack dice. And you're just like, God damn it. Like, yeah.
Well, they definitely can get that many attack dice, but it's not nearly as easy.
Yes, absolutely. Because, I mean, like, you've got to be like, I've got a cloak every turn, so I'm coming out of my cloak and attacking, and I got to be within range of this captain. I got to make sure I did a green maneuver. And now, all right, now I got 11 dice. And you're just like, ugh.
Yeah, and that's one of the big things with Romulans. I mean, the Romulan ships look very good. They're obviously the most popular. Everyone's always loved Romulans since Star Trek The Next Generation, and rightfully so. Their ships are very interesting looking, and they're fucking massive. The ships out for them right now is a science vessel, the Romulan Warbird, which is the very typical recognizable Romulan ship, as well as the Valdor, which is the ship that we saw in Star Trek Nemesis with Bane. And, you know, they really come out on top just because they have a real good proper mix. And when you're talking about like a 3-ship fleet, they can easily fit in 3 ships and have room for all the upgrades that they need. So they're really not hurt for anything in the builds that they're putting out. Like I said, their biggest con is that they basically don't have their like good standalone firepower. It's all dependent on abilities and cards. So as soon as you start taking ships down, they just stop being able to do much of anything. Mm-hmm. All right, so let's talk about the Klingons.
Lots of attack dice, lots of mobility.
Lots of attack dice. Well, okay, back to the Romulans. Probably the best thing they have going for them is everything they have is retardedly maneuverable. They also have the ability to just take backwards movements. They can just back up, which is really, really nice because a lot of fleets don't have that. Whereas the Klingons, every single one of their ships has the ability to do like a flip turn. They go forward 3 and then they flip around, completely around, right? So it's very easy to get behind ships with those abilities. And they have a great maneuverability. They can turn really, really well. They have a huge number of attack dice. They have good captains, good abilities. The biggest issue is that they really don't have any shields. And they tend to have a hard time... They tend to have a hard time when it comes to... Oh, what the hell am I trying to think of?
Beats me.
Well, their ships don't have nearly as many hull points as like the Romulans do. So they'll cloak, but like when you're cloaked, if you end up like fluffing your roll and taking hits while you're cloaked, it just goes straight to your hull, right? Yeah. So they can actually get blown up a lot easier. They're not nearly as sturdy as the Romulans are, and they don't have the maneuverability of the Romulans. So
yeah,
because of that, cloaking is a lot more of like a tricky situation for them, whereas the Romulans, it's like, yeah, well, you just fucking cloak all the time. Duh.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and that's the thing is, you know, as much as I complain about my low captain skill and everything, my ships can take a beating. You know, I've got 3 shields, 4 hull.
Yep.
You know,
middle of the road.
Very, very middle of the road. Whereas, yeah, I find that Klingon ships have very low shields for their size. And even if they've got, you know, 4 or 5 hull points, depending on whether they're mid-sized ship or a heavy. Again, you're right. Like they don't have as many defense dice. You know, if I can get in there and if I scan and strip one away, even if they're cloaked, odds are I'm gonna beat their defense dice roll every single time I shoot at them. Mm-hmm. With Romulans, every time you shoot at them, you feel like you're just pissing in the wind. Where it's just like, oh look, I do nothing this time. Now this ship does nothing, and this ship does nothing. And you're like,
well, yeah.
God damn it. Like, it is so frustrating to shoot at Romulan ships when they're cloaked. Klingon ships, though, like I said, you just line it up, you're in range band 1. I'll guarantee I'll get at least one hull damage.
You're doing
every
damage
turn.
Respectively.
I'm always doing damage. So it's just like Klingon ships, they're kind of like the glass cannons right now. Their shields aren't as big as any of the other fleets. You know, their cloak, they don't have the defense dice to really just rely on their cloak to keep them safe. You know, they want to jump in and mug you. They've got so many bonuses to attack dice if they stay close and if they're close to you. So it's just like they want to get in there, get in the dirt, you know, get up in your face. But if they don't destroy a ship every time they open up, they are going to feel that. So it's just like when they decide to pounce you in that first opening barrage, if they don't blow up a ship, you will blow up one of theirs, guaranteed.
Yeah, and I think that that's definitely one of the big things with the Klingons. They have some cool abilities, but they really don't have abilities like the Romulans or the Federation does, where they're able to keep their ships alive, keep them going, and kind of keep trucking all the way through the fight. Whereas, you know, they're also not like the Dominion, where the Dominion has... Okay, so one of the things we didn't really talk about was that every single ship that's released, there's a standard version with no special ability, and then there's a named version, which is from the canon of the show, and they usually will come with a special ability and one additional shield. And usually they'll have like some extra crew or weapon upgrades that you can take. Fancy stuff. The Klingon ship upgrades, like the special edition ships, what am I thinking? The name ships, that's what I'm looking for. They're not all that impressive. Most of them don't really do anything that crazy, whereas with the Dominion, they have... the Cardassian cruiser name ship is called the Kraxen, and it has a really, really amazing ability where it can actually share its shield tokens with other ships within range band 1, which makes it virtually impossible to completely destroy a ship in the first round of shooting. Yeah. So they have to be rolling fucking amazing in order to destroy a ship in the first round, Whereas when we're shooting against them, they don't really have any ability that's going to help like mitigate the amount of damage coming in. They just have to eat those dice.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest problem with Klingons is you have to go with the captain upgrades. You have to go as high captain skill as you can, as quickly as you can, and just gun away and hope to God you can blow something up before they get to you. And then after that, you're maneuverable enough that you're going to be able to wipe out what's left on the table. You have access to good photon torpedoes. Their photon torpedoes, you get an extra dice if you're firing them from a Vorcha, which is pretty fucking awesome. So like the biggest thing with Klingons, their biggest pro is that their opening salvo is devastating. But they're not nearly as defensive and sturdy as the Romulans are, so they have a much harder time in the late game. But their cards, their captains, all very good, all very middle of the road, which is great. And they have a middle of the road ship, which is awesome. The unfortunate thing is that their light ship is balls. There's really not a whole lot of reason to take it right now unless you're spamming it with Gowron on a battleship, which is kind of like, who really cares? But, you know, you can do some stuff with it. It's just a lot of people aren't using it because it doesn't really work. It doesn't have cloak. It's kind of 50-50. Like, it's cool if you want to play, like, an old-school Klingon fleet. Kronos 1 is coming out soon, so you'll be able to play Kronos 1. You know, like, there's going to be some cool stuff. It's all coming down the pipe. But right now, it's kind of like, that ship doesn't really fit in. So most fleets that you're going to see for Klingons is the one Naggvar battleship and two Vorchas, which is totally fine. That's a great way to go. A middle of the road in a battleship? Fuck, I wish I could take a middle of the road in a battleship.
Yeah, I wish we had a battleship. Our battleship's not out till Christmas.
No, it is not. Okay, so just to give you guys an idea of what you can expect going forward with this game, in the rulebook, they talk about initiative. Initiative is essentially the tiebreaker. So there's an initiative order for every single fleet in the game, and they've already planned ahead to the point where we can see what type of ships we are going to be expecting going forward. Federation has the highest initiative. Anytime there's a tie, Federation wins. Then it's Klingons, Romulans, Dominion. Then it's Borg. Then it's Species 8472. Then it's Kazon. Then it's Bajoran. Then it's Ferengi. Then Independent, then Mirror Universe.
I cannot wait for Mirror Universe ships.
That's just going to be hilarious.
Oh my God.
So basically,
do you think that all they're going to do for, and I have to ask this, will every Mirror Universe, whatever, just have a goatee?
Well, clearly.
Yeah, I mean,
it'll be like Mirror Universe Cisco. You know what I think is going to happen? Is they're going to make a resource card that comes with a token, and the token is just a goatee. And like you can just put it on any ship to make it Mirror Universe, and it like does weird things with their stats. But anyways, the organized play event that's happening right now is the Dominion Wars. It's the Deep Space Nine Dominion Wars. It is basically the Klingons, the Romulans, and the Federation versus the Cardassian, the Breen, and the Dominion. And that's what we're seeing. And it's very, very cool. We got some cool stuff. The organized play is super awesome. But just looking at what we're seeing here, it's very clear that the organized play that we're going to be seeing next time around is going to be Delta Quadrant.
Absolutely.
Boring. Which I'm really looking forward to.
7-2 and Kazon.
I always liked the look of the Kazon ships. I thought they were very cool looking.
Absolutely.
You know?
So like I said, I'm very much looking forward to the Delta Quadrant organized play.
And obviously Borg. Fuck.
Come on. Oh my God, Borg. I like how everyone's just like, it should just be one cube, 100 points. One
cube, 100 points. Like, you can get spheres if you want to run spheres, but like you know how basically Star Wars, you have like the Millennium Falcon and Slave One, and they're like larger size ships. I guarantee you that's exactly what we're going to see for the Borg cube. It's just going to be this massive ship cube that you'll be able to buy in like a box set with all the cards and all that kind of shit. But anyways, yeah, it's definitely a rad addition to the game, and I'm really, really looking forward to Borg just because I think they're going to be a lot of fun. Well, even Species 8472, I mean, shit, we barely saw anything for them, and they're like,
oh, they were like, what, a two-parter?
Yeah, it was like a two-part Voyager episode, and they kind of showed up again.
Yeah.
They were so the MacGuffin.
No, like I said, I think that is really realistically what I think sold both Lang and I on this game, because you look at it, and it's just like, okay, the organized play events are fun. The fact that they have prizes, and they even have like participation prizes. So everyone that shows up every month is going to get a different participation prize. So there's going to be six of them total. You've got your...
And these are not fake gold medals. These are usable aspects of the game that you will love to have.
Yes, I was going to say, I wish that I could take the month two.
One. I know, I want the month two as soon as possible.
Oh, God. Yeah, like I'm just like, I have a critical attack die in my fleet. The moment I get my grubby hands on the month 2-1, I'm just swapping it out because holy shit.
Well, the critical attack dice is great because especially with things like the Breen Energy Disruptor, swapping the critical attack dice into that is amazing. That is something you want.
Absolutely. But like I said, I think other than how much fun the organized play event is, what really had, I think, Lang and I both sold 100% on this game and its potential and the support that WizKids wants to show it is... One, we have a steady stream of ships. I mean, thus far, we know that for the first 6 months of this game's existence, every 2 months, there is a new release, a new wave of ships.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. It's always going to keep the game fresh right around the time when it's starting to feel old. That's fantastic. But then when you look at this, and you can see that right now, they've released the top four for initiative, and they have told you straight up there will be seven more races coming.
Mm-hmm.
And they haven't announced them. They haven't done anything. We don't.
Well, know Ferengi. We saw Ferengi.
Well, I mean, we've seen a Ferengi ship, and you can get some independent characters from like Khan and his lackeys. But still, like I said, there are bits and pieces here where you're seeing some evidence of it, but they have not done any releases. And I think that's what is so smart about this is I can look at it and go, you know what? This is great. They've already put enough plan into this. This organized play event is working. I mean, shit, we're all out, all in. I mean, you've attended, what, two organized play events so far?
One outside of the one that I ran.
Yeah, so two. You still played in it.
Yes, true.
You know, and I'm going to my second one next week, my third one the week after. So it's just like, this is great. I love it. It's getting me out. It's making me want to play the game. I am... eagerly trying to find every fucking card I can get, but like I can find a picture of online beforehand. So I know some of the stuff that's coming out in October.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I've been forwarding it to you and we've been talking about it. So I mean, like the game itself is super fun. And I think the one thing we haven't talked about yet that I think is the most important is the fucking cost.
Mm-hmm.
If you are going to play, like basically, you need to buy a starter set for yourself. Okay. Yes. You need all of the tokens. As much as, you know, in the past, starter sets are great to share. Attack Wing is not that game. Sorry. Shell out, what is it, $40 or $50?
$40.
Shell out $40, pick up your starter set. Now, if you want to play one of the three fleets that are included, you're already a third of the way there. Drop another $30 buying a pair of upgrades. And for $70, you are in. You have every ship you need to play. Hell, I've even seen people buy a single starter set and then pick Federation and trade everything away for more Enterprise Ds.
Yep.
So it's just like, you could conceivably, if you've got enough people getting into it, only spend $40 to get in.
If you have two friends who want to play this game, it is very... Well, yeah, because for me, I had my starter set, right? And I ended up taking pretty much every... Klingon Vorcha class battlecruiser that anyone had available and traded them out. So now I've got three Klingon Vorcha class battlecruisers ready to go. It's like, wow, I've got a second fleet ready to roll. You know, put together a fleet for them, ready to rock.
And that's exactly it. Whereas, like I said, with us for Dominion, I had to shell out $40 and then $45 in blisters.
Yeah, I spent even more than that.
I have spent more than that as well.
Yeah, because I bought the starter kit, and then I bought four Cardassian cruisers.
I was going to say,
a Breen ship.
Right now, I have three of each. Three Breen, three Cardassians. No, seriously, six Dominion ships.
I'm aware. That's the way you got to play it, man. But I think what would be fun...
Because, I mean, in your event, I played the mix one Breen, two Cardassian. On Tuesday, I'm going to play three Cardassian, and then the following one on Monday, I'm going to be an asshole running three Breen ships with energy dissipators. Trying to troll my opponent like crazy. No, but I mean, like, that's the thing where it's just like, because I chose Dominion, I had to spend less than $100.
Yeah.
And that's the most expensive fleet that you can do right now. So the fact of the matter is, you can get into a minis game where the quality of the minis is very nice. It's easy to throw paint onto them. It's, you know, it's a fun game. It's easy to find find games and other people to get involved. Because, I mean, when I say you need to spend $70 and we can play a game right now, you know, how long does it take you to pop shit out of cardboard? Mm-hmm. That's how long it'll take you to get, you know, to play your first game. And all of that for less than $100? Shit. Like, why would you not pick this game up?
Well, and that leads us to the weekly listener poll question for this week, which is, do you feel that a miniatures game having pre-painted models, is it a bad thing or a good thing? You know, I know a lot of people, they kind of look at a game, and if all the models they're releasing are pre-painted, they kind of scoff and leave it at that. Whereas a lot of people kind of like the idea where, hey, if you got time to paint them, paint them. If you don't, at least I'm not playing against bare plastic or bare metal. So do you think it's a good thing or do you think it's a bad thing? That will be the listener poll question for this week. You can vote with that on datagamercast.com. But yeah, I mean, obviously Nathan and I really, really like the game. And, you know, we've had a chance to play a ton. We had a chance to play an event. We had a chance to, you know, go through the fleets and really get a good idea for, like, oh, there's some very interesting list building happening here. And I think the biggest, you know, kudos we can give this game right now is that the game, like you said, has only been out for a month. And we're already looking 6 months down the road going, like, this cannot happen fast enough. I mean, if they had all of those models on the shelves now, we would not be talking about how this game is only $100 to get into.
Oh, no.
We would be talking about how, you know, it's about as much as a Warhammer army, but you can make it happen. You don't have to pay that much.
Yeah.
You could just buy starter sets for your Marine army. Yep. But really, like, that I think is the best thing I can say about it right now is that it's so well designed and it's so well done. I mean, there's obviously flaws in the game. You know, which become more and more apparent the more you play. Like I said, one of the big flaws is that at the points value that we're playing at right now, it's very easy to lose ships. And so you do feel like the game is just too small where, like, a bad roll or a good roll on your opponent's side is suddenly kind of the end of the game for you. So I think that people are going to be playing bigger games. I think that maybe 150 points is going to be a pretty good sweet spot to start for people looking to play bigger games. But shit, man, I could absolutely see sitting down and playing a 300 or 400 point game and having it go like 2 hours and feeling pretty damn good about that.
Yeah, you know what? I bet that by the end of the Dominion War organized play event, we would both probably be able to do that.
Without a doubt, we would be able to do that. I already have probably a good 175 points worth.
Listen, I'm considering a, like, 4 Jem'Hadar fleet.
Well, clearly. I mean, you know, minimum, so I'm buying 2 Jem'Hadar.
Yeah, I was going to say, I have 3 Breen, I have 3 Cardassians. Let's be honest here. I'll probably buy a lot of the Jem'Hadar next month when
you
they come out.
You can't break stride now, Nathan.
Look, I like to have options, all right?
It's the truth, man. But I think, you know, like, even for me, you know, like, I'm absolutely picking up at minimum 2 of the Jem'Hadar 5th Wing. I'm picking up 1 of the 2 heavy battle cruisers coming out for the Jem'Hadar and the Cardassians to start. And we all know for a fact that we're going to be getting Cardassian fighter wings later.
Yes. Well, you have to win those, though, because those are month 5 prizes.
They are participation prizes.
No, are you kidding me?
The Federation and the Cardassian attack fighter models are participation prizes for the last 2 months of the event.
All right, that is the single greatest
thing. Isn't
that
fucking amazing? Because that means if I run this event, I'm going to have like a good 4 or 5 of those models like left over.
Yeah, because I was like, I was looking at it where I'm like, okay, I've got to attend enough to win. Those fucking
oh, those
chips.
Are participation prizes, motherfucker. Those are going to be so abundant.
Oh, because there's another month 5 is another
Breen. Month 5
Breen
is another Breen named ship. It's the same Breen model, but it's another named ship. And then month 6 is the God. Deep Space 9, and then there is another named.
Oh, there's a Bajoran ship. Oh, my God.
So those are participation prizes, which is amazing. So I'm really, really looking forward to that. I mean, we know we're going to be getting some shit. And to be honest with you, once we actually get to the end of the campaign, we'll have as many ship options as every other fleet, with the exception of Federation, which will have one extra.
Yes, because I did not realize that attack squadron of Cardassian ships was participation. I'm going to try to fake
them. I'm amped. I can't wait for that shit. That's, you know, it's great, man. And I'm really, really looking forward to it. But one of the things that I think you and I will likely be throwing out once this campaign comes to an end is like, DS9 Dominion Wars final battle, where it's just going to be you and me with all of our ships on the table, like no captain upgrades. Maybe we'll have like two or three named captain upgrades, and then it'll just be like, Matt, Scott, Jason, come at me, bro. And it like that will be the fight, and we'll just do like a massive 6x4 foot table battle and just go for it. I think that'll be fun.
I was going to say, I'm in for that.
Absolutely.
I was going to say, at minimum, I should have three sets of the Cardassian fighters.
Oh, easily. By that point, we should have three. Dude, if I run an event, I'm going to have five left over. So I'm all about doing that, at least for that month.
All about swords.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just going to be bananas. But that has been Jaded Gamercast for this week. My name is Lang.
I'm Nathan.
Have a good one.
Cheers.